Radio Prague News.
Polling stations have opened across the Czech Republic for people to vote in municipal and Senate elections. The Czech Republic could block a trade agreement between Canada and the European Union, says a Czech official. And the first 9 months of 2010 saw the lowest number of road deaths in more than two decades. Polling stations opened on Friday afternoon across the Czech Republic for people to vote in municipal and Senate elections. One-third of the Czech Senate's 81 seats are being contested, along with positions on municipal councils. This election sees a record number of candidates in both areas, with 226,000 people vying for municipal posts, with 3 to 4 candidates per post, and 227 candidates competing for the 27 Senate seats. The polls are open from 2 until 10 p.m. and on Saturday from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. A second round of voting in the Senate elections will take place next weekend. The Czech Republic might block a trade agreement between the European Union and Canada over visas reimposed by Ottawa on Czech citizens. The Czech ambassador to the European Union, Milena Vícenová, told Czech radio on Friday. Ms. Vícenová said that Prague is considering rejecting the agreement which is being negotiated. The deal should facilitate trade between the EU and Canada and is expected to yield billions of euros. The agreement has to be approved by the parliaments of all EU member states. Ms. Vícenová said that if Canada does not change its position on the visa issue, Czech lawmakers might reject the treaty. Prague has been pushing for the abolition of Canadian visas for Czech citizens ever since they were reimposed in July 2009, following a wave of asylum applications, many of them from Romanies. Between January and September this year, 543 people were killed on Czech roads, which is the lowest number since the fall of communism, the police headquarters said on Friday. Compared to the same period last year, 59 fewer people died in road crashes. However, the number of traffic accidents rose to just over 55,000 in the first 9 months of this year. Drivers under the influence caused over 3,700 accidents, in which 66 people were killed. So far, the worst month this year was July, with 104 victims. The head of the Czech Traffic Police, Leoš Tržil, however, warned of excessive optimism, saying the statistics could significantly worsen before the year's end. The police search for a 9-year-old girl who had gone missing in the Prague district of Troja went nationwide on Friday. The girl was last seen leaving a group of friends after school on Wednesday and did not return home. A police dog found her bag and a bottle near an area of garden cottages near the Kobylisi metro station on the route to her house. Mounted units and a helicopter with thermal vision are also involved in the search. A police spokesman said on Friday the search would continue until the case is cleared. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The weekend will be overcast with occasional rain. Daytime highs should range between 7 and 12 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter, and that's the end of the news.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, we look at what it might mean for the government if it loses the Senate majority in upcoming elections. The public has a chance to try a modern new tram, which boasts a number of firsts on Prague streets. We'll also have the business news. And a little later, we speak to the man behind a Prague exhibition that features rather graphic modern art that some may find shocking.
Blood, pain, violence is not something what's typical for contemporary art. It's something that's part of art since the beginning.
That's all ahead. Major budget cuts are a mainstay of the coalition government's platform, but there is one post-election scenario that could present a major problem for them. The left-wing opposition Social Democrats say they hope to win at least 12 of 27 Senate seats being contested in elections this and next weekend. If that happens, the party would gain a majority in the upper house and make it very hard for the coalition to meet its planned budget deficit for next year. Joining me in the studio for more on the topic is Christian Falvey. Now, Christian, can you explain the situation that the coalition and the budget faces in the event of the Social Democrats gaining a majority in the Senate?
Getting the budget deficit down to 135 billion crowns has been a priority for this government. And if they want to do that, then part of the plan relies on 45 billion crowns that would be saved through budget cuts that would be valid as of January 1st. So these include cuts to state subsidies for building loans, social welfare, and cutting tax rebates for certain high-income entities, obviously things that the left-wing parties are really strongly opposed to. Now, the Social Democratic Party currently has 29 seats in the 80-member Senate. If they were to win at least 12 seats in these Senate elections that are taking place this weekend and next weekend, then the right-wing majority falls in the upper house and these cuts can be vetoed. Or rather, the Social Democrat chairman Bohuslav Sobotka has promised they will be vetoed and blocked for as long as possible.
So having even the slimmest of majorities in the Senate would mean a big opportunity for the opposition to derail important legislation that they, as you pointed out there, they're vehemently opposed to.
It would be their only opportunity, and one that the government essentially handed them on a silver platter, because even though the chance of it happening are only as high as an opposition victory in the Senate, the government scheduled the reading of the legislation for too late in the year.
In terms of the timeline, how would the situation play out if the Social Democrats gained that Senate majority?
Well, the government scheduled the reading of the cuts for the late date of the 26th of October, and it was composed as a bill that was to be passed on a first reading, which could have happened if the opposition was to go along with it. But the opposition Social Democrat and Communist parties have promised to force a full three readings, saying they want every opportunity to express their views on the matter. So that means the coalition majority cannot pass the bill on to the Senate earlier than December 1st. The Senate has 30 days to deal with the legislation, and a Social Democratic majority will surely use every moment of that time, sending it back to the Chamber of Deputies with a veto at the very end of the month. And that doesn't leave enough time for the veto to be overridden. And so in that case, the cuts wouldn't be passed before the end of the year.
What have the government parties said about the possibility of this happening?
Some have shown various degrees of concern, saying it would be a major problem for tax administration next year if tax regulations to be passed for next year were to be stalled. But Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek, who is one of the leaders of the Top 09 party, says it's still too soon to worry about what could happen after the elections. But it is, in any case, another variable that adds no small amount of anticipation to the election outcome.
Okay, thanks to Christian Falvey for that. And of course, join us this weekend for coverage of how that election plays out. Now, turning to this story now, the last few weeks have seen commuters in Prague able to test for the first time the brand new 15T. That's the four-city tram designed by Škoda Transportation, still undergoing trial runs. The 15T is a little boxier than previous models, but still elegant, indeed perhaps more refined, and offers a slew of improvements. It is, for example, the first 100% low-floor tram in the Czech Republic. A little earlier, I spoke to Škoda Transportation's Vojtěch Plateník. He was the assistant project manager on the new 15T.
It is quite different because it is a 100% low-floor tram car. And this concept is the first to be produced in Czech Republic, designed and produced.
Which means it'll make it much more user-friendly, of course, for people, for example, in wheelchairs or for parents with strollers.
Definitely, this advantage is for mothers with strollers, with disabled people, but also the design of the interior is user-friendly for example, blur-eyed people, which means handles and bars have different colors for better orientation inside the tram car.
What about the overall design? Looking at some pictures, the exterior, it looks also very different from designs that have come before.
The tram is very different because it has turnable buggies, which means it can have a square design from the front point of view and also from the top point of view, and it also gives us the opportunity to use very well the interior, which means, for example, you can walk without taking any stairs or steps from the very front of the tram to the very back.
That is, I imagine, something that must be welcomed by people who have tested the tram. What has been the reaction so far?
Well, the overall reactions from the new passengers for the past few weeks we've had is basically very positive, which pleases us as the manufacturer. And one of the very well accepted features is that the tram is very quiet. It is also very well designed in terms of the interior, of the layout of the seats, so it enables the passengers to exchange very quickly, to get off and get on the tram in a very short time.
One of the things that has often been a point of discussion in the past when it comes to trams is the upholstery. I know originally trams had wooden chairs, then they had plastic ones. Lately, they have been upholstered. But my understanding is that the new one has new seats again. Is that correct?
In terms of the development, we've sort of come back to the wooden chairs again, because there have been problems with upholstered chairs that they were not kept clean, which the new concept is much better for the passengers. They can be kept clean for a longer time.
When will the final vehicles be completed to be delivered to Prague's Transport Authority?
This all depends on the testing process. First, we need to finish the so-called homologation process, which means we need to get a stamp from the railway authority. We expect to have this done by the end of this year, and probably the first four trams would be delivered this year, and about 50 more by the end of 2011, and 250 in total.
That was Wojciech Platynik, the assistant project manager on the new four-city tram. Indeed, I saw it myself last weekend just on Prague streets, and it looks very cool, so I'll be looking forward to trying that out. The latest in business news is next with Ian Willoughby.
Thanks, Jan. The Czech government has announced plans to rein in a huge boom in subsidized solar power. It led to alarming warnings of possible electricity price rises of up to 12% for households and 17% for firms next year. After some debate, cabinet members agreed on Wednesday to tax the solar power subsidies and increase charges for land leased for solar panels. The government will also offset price increases by selling emissions permits and has pledged that electricity prices won't go up by any more than 10% in 2011. However, that figure is still far too high, according to the Czech Confederation of Industry. They've said that Czech firms won't be able to cope with the rise of any more than 5%.
The fact that at least some emissions permits will be sold rather than given away appears to be one reason that share prices in the state-controlled power giant ČEZ fell on Thursday to their lowest point in nearly a year and a half. The newspaper Hospodářské noviny reported that another factor was speculation that ČEZ plans to postpone by several years a huge project to complete the Temelín nuclear power station in South Bohemia. The State Security Council is set to make a decision on Temelín in a month's time. In the meantime, whatever troubles beset ČEZ, its majority shareholder, the Czech state, will expect dividends to remain at previous levels, officials have said.
The Czech Republic has taken the first step towards allowing competition on its rail market by publishing notice of the plan in the official journal of the EU. Trains run by alternative operators should then appear on three routes with the start of the 2013-2014 timetable. In 2009, the state-operated Czech Railways won a 10-year contract to run all high-speed trains on the country's rail network. However, every year another 15% of rail transport will be exempted, allowing for a gradual increase in competition for long-distance routes. Regardless of the ministry's timetable, the first private trains will appear next year when the student agency group launches a Prague-Ostrava service. It won't qualify as public service, so will receive no subsidies.
Czechs are getting more and more used to shopping on the internet, according to an estimate by Srovname.cz, a website that helps customers compare prices. It says that total online sales by Czech companies should reach a record 30 billion crowns, that's over 1.7 billion US dollars, in 2010. LED backlight LCD television sets are currently the best-selling item on the Czech web. The present pre-Christmas season is peak time for internet sales, with the amount spent in the last quarter around the same as the total for the other 9 months of the year.
Finally, advertisers have begun targeting patients in Czech hospital waiting rooms, Lidové Noviny reported this week. Such patients make for a captive audience with average waits lasting 3 hours. The newspaper said a number of hospitals in Prague have already been fitted with TV screens running ads, with more on the way in the capital and around the country. In fact, the company behind the system, Onyx Vision, said it hoped to have 800 screens in operation at Czech hospitals by the end of next year.
Thanks to Ian Wilby for that. The business news for this week, and tune in again same time, same place for business next time. Now, around 10,000 people have already visited the exhibition Decadence Now since it's opened its doors in Prague just 2 weeks ago. Some people have been shocked by the modern art on show, though others point out there is a long tradition behind many of the images portrayed. Ian Willoughby meets the man behind the popular show in this week's edition of The Arts.
Decadence Now at Prague's Rudolfinum Gallery has become one of the most talked-about exhibitions of the year in the Czech Republic. An extremely ambitious show by local standards, it brings together over 140 pieces by leading contemporary artists, including Damien Hirst, Jeff Koons, Gilbert and George, and Cindy Sherman. Sections with titles like Sex, Pain and Death feature many works that are unusually graphic, some might say shocking. Indeed, under-15s aren't allowed to enter unaccompanied. I discussed the exhibition with its curator, art historian Otto M. Urban, and began by asking, what does the art on show at Decadence Now tell us about contemporary society?
The same what the works showed 100 years or 200 years ago. We have to remember that even Goya's prints or late black paintings were quite controversial and caused quite radical criticism. So the fact that artists like Goya, Felicien Rops, Otto Dix, Hans Bellmer, or the contemporary artists, they are dealing with the dark side of the human existence, human mind, human life, human body, and they can tell us that our society is still full of prejudices, clichés, misunderstandings. Even we feel that everything is possible, everything is available, and everything already exists.
The show is subtitled Visions of Excess. What is the visitor meant to get from viewing the excess on show here?
Actually, the subtitle is based on an American edition of French philosopher Georges Bataille's collected writings from the late 20s and 1930s. Because Bataille, in fact, was, for my concept, very inspiring, and I think that he is one of the big thinkers of the 20th century whose work, whose ideas connects like a Baudelairean tradition from late 19th century with nowadays. And what the visitor should gain from seeing the show, several things, of course. One is that the visitor has chance to see collection of artistically high quality paintings, sculptures, photographs, works of art which using the language of visual culture are touching sometimes very subjective, very personal, very emotional parts of our existence. So I believe that to deal with the problems like death, madness and so on is much easier through the art than through a real personal experience. Art is in certain sense sort of experience without or painful experience without pain.
At the entrance, you warn people of a sensitive disposition that there could be some images here that could be too strong for them. What particular images do you think here, what particular works could cause offense?
That's the question. You know, we didn't expect or we didn't want to cause any scandals or any controversies, anything like that. You know, I'm art historian, and my main field is like late 19th and early 20th century, you know. So even my approach to contemporary art is somehow traditional, you know. So, but on the other side, we use the experiences of our colleagues from abroad, you know, where these kind of warnings are a regular part of similar exhibitions. You know, we can mention, for example, Pop Life in Tate Modern last year, you know, which was quite controversial, and the information for visitors was part of the exhibition. And it's actually quite standard in exhibitions which present works which are on the edge of explicit sexual representation, religious themes, representation of pain or violence, and so on. And I believe that it's sort of fair to inform visitors that there are works which might be problematic. You know, we didn't want to shock somehow someone who would visit the show and suddenly see works which would be offending. You know, so I think it's a result of sort of rising political correctness of nowadays.
The human body has, of course, featured in art forever, but perhaps not in the way that we see here. We see a lot of erections, for example. We see X-rays. We see a lot of blood. Do you think that we lose something when there's nothing left to the imagination?
Not really, you know. I don't think it's like a typical just for contemporary art, you know. If you would look at the ancient Greek or Roman sculpture especially, you would find sculptures of different hermaphrodites and dwarfs as well, you know. Just look at the medieval representations of crucified Christ, you know, torturing of Christ, torturing of saints, you know. Imagine a famous painting by Titian called Apollo and Marsyas, where a human being which is still alive is skinned out of the skin, you know. So the blood, pain, violence is not something what's typical for contemporary art. It's something what's part of art since the beginning, you know. That's why I don't think that we are losing something. You could ask the same question: are we losing some kind of mystery after seeing bloody body of Jesus Christ taken down from the cross? There was a certain reason why medieval or Renaissance painters presented every single wound, every single drop of blood on the body of Christ, you know. So this is actually part of the tradition. The problem is that, of course, we are much more sensitive to something what's current, what's contemporary, because we feel that it's around us. I would say if we would present here like a Grünewald's Eisenheim altar, for example, which is very well known because it's like a naturalist explicit representation of pain, torturing, suffering, and so on, people would not be so shocked as after seeing the pieces by David Bailey or Damien Hirst, just because it's painted. But what is represented is actually the same.
Is there any way in which artists can go too far? For instance, in the next room here, I saw a photograph of a human head on a plate. Could that be going too far?
You know, that's the same problem as the previous question, you know. Executed human head on the plate is based on the biblical story of Salome and the head of Saint John the Baptist. And again, if you would look at art history, already since late Gothic art, then continuously, the motif of executed human head is a regular part of the visual culture. You know, so here the case is also illusion. It's not executed head. The rest of the body is hidden below the table, you know. But it's again the problem of the representation, you know. You would never say after seeing painting of Saint John the Baptist or sculpture represented the same, but if it's photograph, so we take it as a reality. But photography is also illusion.
I thought it was a real head, I have to admit.
It's a real head, but it's not executed head. It's a dead body in some Mexican morgue, and the photographer Witkin made a hole in the table and put the head through the hole, so it feels that it's executed head, but it's not.
But it's still a real dead person.
It's still a real dead person, yes.
Doesn't that disrespect the dead in a way?
Not really. I think it's completely opposite. If you would talk with Witkin, the photographer who did that, so he has extremely ethical like attitude towards what he is photographing. He deals with every single relic or limb or part of the human body with extreme respect. and he is sort of showing us something that again was a regular part of the visual culture or culture in general. Just remember ossuaries, you know, which are nowadays big touristic attraction. So is it okay to go to ossuary just for attraction? I would say that it's a quite serious question, you know. What's worse ethically, to open these kind of places for tourists or to photograph with respect remains of dead people?
That was curator Otto M. Urban talking there about Decadence Now, a show that has taken the Czech capital by storm. He was talking to Ian Willoughby. If you enjoyed our program, don't forget to write to us here at the station. You can write to english@radio.cz or you can send us a letter or postcard to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. Also, if you'd like to keep an eye on those upcoming communal and Senate elections, be sure to visit our website. That's radio.cz. And those elections taking place today, Friday, and on Saturday. So be sure to look us up on the net. I'm Jan Wellinger for all of us here at Radio Prague. Thank you for joining us this day, and take care.